On this 18th day of January 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 30, The Disappearance of the Yadu Dynasty, text number 2. Brahma Shapo Pasham Srishte Sokole Yadu Varshabaha Presim Sarvanetranam Tanum sakatam atyajat. Translation. This is King Parikit questioning Shukadeva Goswami. After his own dynasty met destruction from the curse of the Brahmins, how could the best of the Yadus give up his body, the dearmost object of all eyes? Who's the best of the Yadus? Who can guess?
Krishna.
Purport. In relation to this verse, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the personality of Godhead never gives up his spiritual body, which is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. The word katam therefore indicates how is it possible, meaning it is not actually possible for Lord Krishna to give up his eternal form, which is prayasim sarvanetranam, the most attractive object of pleasure for the eyes and all the other senses. I'm going to read the next one too. Just read the Sanskrit. Just read the Sanskrit. That'll help us. Once their eyes were fixed upon his transcendental form, women were unable to withdraw them. And once that form had entered the ears of the sages and become fixed in their hearts, it would never depart. What to speak of acquiring fame? The great poets who described the beauty of the Lord's form would have their words invested with transcendentally pleasing attraction. And by seeing that form on Arjuna's chariot, all the warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained the liberation of gaining a spiritual body similar to the Lord's. Purport. Transcendental liberated personalities such as the gopis of Vrindavan and Rukmini, the original goddess of fortune, were constantly meditating on the Lord's spiritual body. Great liberated sages, satams, having heard about Lord Krishna's body, could not take it out of their hearts. The Lord's bodily beauty expanded the love and poetic output of great liberated poets, and simply by seeing Lord Krishna's body, the warriors of Kurukshetra achieved spiritual liberation with an eternal body similar to the Lord's. Therefore, it is impossible to imagine Lord Krishna's eternal form of bliss to be in any way material. Those who imagine that Lord Krishna gave up his eternal form are certainly bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy. Om jnana tivarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chukshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge and offered my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, there's two main ideas here. First of all, in moving the narrative forward, the Uddhava Gita has now been spoken, and now the final two chapters of this canto will be spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. And this is this rather heart-rending chapter called The Disappearance of the Yadu Dynasty. Generally, devotees don't like to contemplate the disappearance of the Lord, or even the spiritual master. They didn't go into detail about that because it's so wrenching to the heart. But this is a Purana. Purana means ancient history. And so this will be recounted. But all along the way, we'll be warned not to think that this is some kind of a material thing going on. We'll soon hear about how the Yadus, who are, after all, Krishna's dear friends, his associates in Dwarka, by Krishna's arrangement, they drink this liquor. As far as I can tell, it's like rice wine. And they become completely intoxicated. And when you're intoxicated, you don't act according to your normal consciousness. And somehow they were induced to become angry against each other. People become, they're warriors after all, they're kshatriyas. And so they're fighters. So that was directed against each other. And they had this battle and they annihilated each other. They were even attacking Krishna and Balaram. Yeah. We'll hear about that in a few days. So what is that? I mean, you know, if you just read that, it can be completely bewildering. But all of this is Krishna's arrangement. Even I was thinking as I was reading and preparing this class, how I recently read Bhishma's prayers in the 8th chapter, I believe it is. No, 7th chapter of the first canto. And there he remembers how he was fighting with Krishna. You know, he was shooting his arrows at Krishna. When Krishna was defending Arjuna, there's this famous pastime when Bhishma was accused of not fighting to his full strength because he really loved the other side. He had great love and affection for the Pandavas and, of course, for Krishna. He was a great devotee. But he was fighting on the other side. So naturally, Duryodhana, as the battle progressed, he was thinking, well, Bhishma is our main warrior. Maybe he's not fighting, you know, he has a conflict of interest, right? So Bhishma said, okay, you think I have a conflict of interest? Tomorrow I'm going to fight so hard that either I will be able to kill Arjuna, who's the greatest fighter on the other side, or Krishna will break his vow, which was that he would not fight. Remember, Krishna promised not to fight. So that's what happened. Arjuna had gotten off his chariot. He was being attacked by Bhishma. He was in danger of being killed. And Krishna got off the chariot, picked up the wheel. It acted like the chakra. And he's ready to kill Bhishma. And Bhishma said, this is a famous painting. You've seen it. Please, take me. And then if I remember correctly, the conch shell blew at that time and everything stopped. It was like a, you know, they followed that very carefully. But Bhishma was shooting his arrows. And he remembers as he's lying on his bed of arrows at the final moments, seeing Krishna before him and all the great sages, and Arjuna is there having brought some water from the Ganges with this transcendental arrow. And he's remembering having shot Krishna, and then blood was coming. It's right there in the Sanskrit verse that Krishna got these injuries, and he enjoyed it because he enjoyed this fighting rasa, this chivalrous rasa with Bhishma. But what is that? Krishna's body is bleeding? It doesn't compute, right? But this is part of the whole rasa. You know, this is part of the whole scene. Krishna makes the arrangement so it doesn't break up or break the mood. Just like with his mother, and when she opens his mouth, when he opens his mouth and shows her the whole universe, it breaks the mood, right? Of her regarding him as a little helpless child. So immediately he covers her with the yoga maya curtain, and she forgets that he's the Supreme Personality of God. And she even says, oh, I was thinking this is my son and Nanda is my husband and he's the father of this child. How foolish I was. And Krishna didn't like that, so he covered her. So all of this is that way. This whole pastime of Krishna's disappearance and Balaram's disappearance and the Yadavas, it's all part of the greater plan, because after all, the Yadavas, they were also expansions of the demigods. You know, all they had come down and both in Vrindavan and there, and they needed to return there. And the way it's described, they were seen by Krishna as a danger to the earth. If he left the planet, then he would be this powerful army, and they wouldn't have him anymore to direct them, and he was seeing that they might become a burden on the earth also. So there were all these reasons. So this happens. So these particular two verses, though, which I'd like to focus on, especially the third one, which I read, text 3, this talks about the all-attractive nature of Krishna's form and body. We shouldn't neglect that. We, of course, focus on the holy name, chanting the holy name. This is the Yuga Dharma. See? But we have to know that Krishna is absolute, and that part of our purification and part of our developing our attraction for Krishna, or let me put it this way, reviving our natural attraction for Krishna, is also contemplating his form. The deities, the pictures, the descriptions, going back to the sound of Krishna's form, very important. Because this is the disease. We're absorbed in our own form and the forms of material forms of others who we find attractive, whether man or woman, right? And so much propaganda, so much literature, so much everything, media of all kinds, is glorifying the physical form, the beauty of the hair, the beauty of the eye, the beauty of this. All the things that when you actually analyze them are not pretty at all. They're just material energy. They're just, you know, you learn very quickly in the ashram, oh, Prabhu, hair is just compressed stool. Did they tell you that? It's from Prabhupada, not my idea. It's not clean. You know, when you shave, you're supposed to take a shower. You know. So what is that? I mean, hair is one of the most beautiful things, right? Yeah, it's compressed stool. You know? This is our body. In other words, it's unclean. Our bodies are by nature unclean. That's why you have to keep washing them. Otherwise, it becomes obnoxious. Right? But that's not true of Krishna's body. His is the original body. Ours are just are poor, very poor reflections, or puppets, you know, or what you, models, dolls, whatever you want to call them. So that's why we have so much in the Srimad Bhagavatam and so much of the Goswami literature contemplating the form of Krishna. So why don't we do that? Let's do that for the next few minutes. Now here it's describing the dearmost object of all eyes. So there's so many beautiful descriptions like that. It immediately can come to mind Rukmini. Rukmini's letter. You remember how she wrote a letter to Krishna? She was the first queen, right, that he married. So she had to be kidnapped because she was betrothed to Shishupal. Shishupal, who was a demon, who all he knew all of his life was insulting Krishna. You know, that was his role. You know, he's one of the Jai and Vijay pairs. So she didn't want to marry him. But that was, her brother was into it, you know, and kind of browbeat the father to promise her to Shishupal. So it's all set up, kind of a dramatic scene. Here. So she sends Krishna a letter. You know, she's very learned, and actually she's a princess. And the first verse of this letter describes Krishna's form. And the idea is that she only heard about it, but by just hearing that form, about Krishna's beauty and attractiveness, she fell in love with him. This happens a lot. So what does she say? Shudvagunan bhuvanasundadashinvatangte nirvishyakarna vivarai hadatongatapam rupam drisham drishamatam akilartalabam tvayatritavishatichittamapattapambe. So they say, my dear Krishna, in the letter, she wrote the letter, but then the Brahmin spoke it to Krishna. He read it out loud to Krishna. So Shudvagunan, having heard of your qualities, my dear Lord, Shudvagunan Bhuvanasundara, O most beautiful of all in all the worlds, Shrinvatante Nirvishakarna, it's entered into my ears, my ear holes, this description. Nirvishakarna Vivarai Hadatongatapam. And it's completely removed all bodily miseries. In other words, she's become transcendental, and she's saying that anyone else can do that too. This is the process for rising above the modes of nature and mitigating material miseries. Hadatongatapam, bodily miseries, she's got. And rupam, as far as your form, rupam drisham drishamatam akilartalabam. Exactly what's mentioned here, that those who see your form have achieved all the goals of sight. Rupam drisham drishamatam akilartalabam. And I must admit, O Achyuta, that my consciousness has shamefully entered into you, and I can't forget you. You know, she's expressing her love for you. So that's one expression. The ladies of Mathura, when Krishna and Balaram walk into the city, you know, this is a tremendous festival for them. They've heard about him also, you know, now they're finally seeing him, the two brothers. And so they rush up some on the roofs, and some come out onto the path. And they also have this beautiful verse that's quoted, Lord Chaitanya quoted in his teachings to Sanatana, I believe, about the form of Krishna. So they're praising the gopis. You see, this is another lesson, how the great devotees, they also always appreciate the service of the other devotees. And they appreciate how much the gopis are appreciating this form. So gopyastapakkamachadanyadamushya rupam lavanyasaram asamodvam ananyasiddham drigbip bandhunasabhavanavangarabam ekantadama yashashak shriya aishurasya. Very full verse, you know. They all are. So what austerities must these gopis have performed? What did they perform? To always be able to see this form of Krishna. This form that they're seeing now. You know. Lavanya Sadam. Who can guess what that means? You know what Lavanya is? Lavanya is beauty. And there's many words for beauty. And just like in English, the words may have slightly different connotations. So Lavanya is a word that means beauty and grace. You know, beauty in motion kind of thing. You know, Lavanya Sadam. It's often used to describe when the dancing. You know, he's dancing. And Sadam, the essence of graceful beauty, you know. Think ballet dancer, You know, everything graceful, motion, the beauty, everything. Asamodvam ananyasiddham. Unequaled and unsurpassed, and not perfected or not enhanced by his ornaments. Rather, he enhances them. This comes out also. You know, that these ornaments, he's already self-perfect. So ananyasiddham. So drigbi pabanti, that these gopis and other residents of Vrindavan, they drink that nectar of beauty through the eyes. Drigbi pabanti anusabhavan avandurabham. Very difficult to attain. And ever fresh. Ekanta dhamma yashashakriya aishwarasya. It is the only abode, the original abode, ekanta of fame, beauty, and opulence, this form of Krishna's. So when you hear these things, the idea is it's meant to, you know, enliven your mind, and then when you see the form of Krishna, the deity, or the pictures, or you just think of Krishna, you chant your rounds, then it deepens your appreciation, you know, for Krishna's form. You should want to see that form, and that spiritual form. When will that day be mine? When Krishna will reveal, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'm so far. Now, the interesting thing about it is that they say, oh, they always see it, but actually the gopis rarely got to see Krishna directly. You know, he's always going out in the forest, and then he's coming back and staying at home, you know. So they see him on the way out, and they see him coming back. But they always see him, because they're always chanting his glories. When they're at home, you know, that the Gopi Gita, the Yugal Gita that we learned, or the Venu Gita, these are the gopis singing in separation from Krishna, describing the details of his form and activities. And in that way, they're seeing. So this is the path of seeing through hearing. This is spoken of by Brahma. When he offers his prayers for creative energy, very nice prayers. He talks a lot about that. Smelling the fragrance of the lotus feet through the ears by hearing. But this particular verse, so it's from Bhakti Yoga, Padibhajata Ritsaroja, Ase Shuteshita Pato Nananata Pungsan. So he's speaking to Krishna, he's offering prayers. From Bhakti Yoga, Padibhavata Ritsaroja. When the great devotees engage in devotional service, Padibhavata Ritsaroja, on the lotus of their hearts, you take your seat there. You know, they follow the Shruta Ikshita Pata, the path of seeing through hearing. Shruta Ikshita Pata. And then he said, whatever form they like of yours, and you have many, you have unlimited forms, then you appear in that form. Yadadhyatu the guy of Bhavayanta Dadlapu Panayasei Sadanugrahaya, out of your mercy for the devotees. If you want to contemplate Lord Ram, then he'll appear in that form. Lord Nrisingadev, he'll appear in that form. Krishna in Dwarka with the queen, then that's the form he'll reveal to you. So he reciprocates our bhajan, or our loving devotion, whichever mood we're in. So then there's another one. The gopis say the same thing as Krishna enters the forest. Vrindavan, in the Venu Gita, famous for Akshan Matambala Midam Namidam Vadama. They're saying exactly what's said here. For those who are wise, there's no greater fruit than seeing this form. Akshan Matambala Midam Napadam Vadama Sakya Pashun and Vivesyatova Yase. They're actually speaking about Krishna and Balaram at this point, because they're a little bit shy. They're thinking maybe their elders are going to hear them. So when they first start the song, this is the Venu Gita, the song of Krishna meditating as he plays the flute out in the forest. Chapter 21, if you're interested, 10th canon. They start speaking about Krishna and Balaram for the first two verses. Because Krishna and Balaram, okay. You know, but if they're just speaking about Krishna, then they might their elders will get suspicious that they have some special affair going on with Krishna. They don't want that. This is in the commentaries, I remember. So the first is those who see the two faces of Krishna and Balaram as they enter the forest with their friends, herding the cows before them, playing their flutes, and casting loving glances at all, sidelong glances at all the residents of Vrindavan, they who see that have achieved all the goals of seeing. Aksham Bhutam Balamidam. The same idea. So what does that mean? I mean, you know, we have seen beautiful things in this lifetime, you know. I mean, we've seen things that attracted our eyes, certainly, you know. But notice how it always gets stale, you know. You see some beautiful person of the opposite sex or something, but it's never like that, where it's like you never want to see anything else. You think you've seen, you know. You may write a song like that, but it doesn't really work like that. And it's certainly never, ever fresh, you know. As time goes on, anything in this world degrades. What's beautiful today is ugly tomorrow. Even in a few minutes, a flower. Prabhupada gives an example of a flower. You know, there's so many flowers we pick and offer to Krishna. They're very fragrant, beautiful, color, you know, soft, fragrant, you know, all that things. But then how long does it last? You know, after a day or 2 days, you know, you have to throw them away. They become trash, you know. So that's the nature of this material world. It's a reflection. It's temporary. So the things in this world that attract our senses, the hearing, the seeing, the smelling, tasting, touching, they all are temporary. What's attractive now will be unattractive in a short while. And so, as spirit souls, we're always looking for that object of the senses. We're looking for the fulfillment of the senses that won't degrade. They will not degrade. And that only comes in contact with Krishna. You know, the most beautiful sounds, the most beautiful vision or form, the taste, smell, all of them, are there in relation to Krishna's pastimes. But he has to be the center. The problem is that we having rejected Krishna's supremacy, we're trying to serve our own senses. We're trying to give fulfillment to our senses separate from Krishna. And that means that we can't experience his beauty, fragrance, sounds. You know, there's a wonderful passage in the Antya Lila. You know, the Antya Lila is Krishna's describing Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in Puri, the last 12 years, I think. And this is from the Govinda Lilamrita, but it directly pertains to this. She says all the senses. You know, what does he say? Soundarayamata sindhu bangalana nachitadi samplavaka karnanandi kalasvanabhavi. No. Karnanandi. I forget all of them. Please, I forget the Sanskrit. But she's going through all the senses. And she's saying that, oh, this form of Krishna, when the gopis see it, their desire grows like a great, to be with Krishna, grows like a great ocean. And overcomes the mountain, the hills of their consciousness, and she goes through the hearing. What do you hear? What do you hear? You know, the voice and the words, two separate things. Just the voice is so attractive, like a rumbling of clouds. The words are always very attractive. Bhagavad Gita, you know, ever fresh, and so many other words Krishna speaks. He just spoke so many words, Yudhva Gita, you know. And there's also the flute sound, the tinkling of the ankle bells. You know, the acharyas he blows the flute, the horn, all of these different sounds Krishna makes. Sometimes he imitates the different sounds of the birds. That's also very attractive. Joking. Yeah. Best joker. I remember reading this one, you know, the boys joke with Krishna as he comes back from the forest. Well, what is that joking? There's, you know, everything is buried in the Vedic culture. You know, Krishna's Kaviraj writes different kinds of joking. Speaking gibberish. False arguments, you know, challenging one to complete a verse. It's called capping verses, you know. And like 12 different kinds of joking, as they're just walking in the forest herding the cows. And Krishna's the best of all in joking like that. So anyway, that's just the hearing. And then there's the touch, his soft hands, the soft lotus feet, the fragrance, this mixed fragrance of aguru and lotus and all of these different wonderful fragrances, you know. The taste, you know, prasadam. So we're meant to do that. Otherwise, we forget. We forget Krishna's attraction. We need to hear about these things, and it's all found. The wonderful thing about it that Krishna is absolute. So when we chant the holy name, and we're absorbed in the holy name, then all our senses become enlivened. You know, have you noticed how you get energy from chanting, spiritual energy for service? There's a desire. For a while until you forget, and then it becomes. But that's, imagine for a moment what it's like to be a pure devotee, always being obsessed with more and more service to Krishna, always contemplating these five, you know, aspects of Krishna, the beautiful form, the activities, you know, the past, the smell, the fragrance, the touch of Krishna. I mean, that's what Krishna, ultimate Krishna consciousness is, never to be separated from that, which we've left so long ago. Yeah. So that's then the question here is, well, how could he give up this body, which is the source of all these things? And the answer is he doesn't. Satchidananda Vigraha. He has the Satchidananda. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. His form is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, infinitely. And we also possess a form like that. But because we're minute, it's covered now. So the process of devotional service is awakening our awareness of Krishna's form and simultaneously our own and the relationship, which is one of service. Service. It's like now we're spontaneously attracted to service to our senses. Right? As soon as there's a little bit, right? As soon as it's a little cold, put on the jacket. You know. As soon as we're a little hungry, feed the sense. Right? If something beautiful comes by, immediately you're attracted. Nice sounds, immediately attracted. So we're spontaneously attracted, but not to serving Krishna's senses. The real senses, the model for all our senses. So that's why there's all of these principles of devotional service. To wean us away from this addiction to serving our senses, which just keeps us bound here to this world of suffering. It's a very scientific process. And pratyaksha, apatyakshavagamam dharmim. Who knows what that word pratyaksha means, Balaram?
Directly perceived.
Directly perceived. This is why we're here. Even you walk and wander in the door and you chant a round or two and you're directly perceiving something. The holy name is so powerful. This is our only salvation, the holy name. Because it gives us direct perception. And on the basis of that, then we become more fascinated about the philosophy behind it. And we get into the association of the devotees. We were just discussing this one verse. I'll share with you. It's such a nice verse. You know, I'll look it up. Fifth canon, 12th chapter, 16th verse. It's the last verse of the chapter. These are some short chapters there. It's Jadabharata, speaking to King Rahugana. So he says, Tasmat, he spoke some other verses. Therefore, Tasmat, Noro sanga susanga jata ganasi nehaiva vivrikna moha hading tadiha kardana shrutabhyam labda smatir yata dipadam advanaha. Such a nice verse. Prabhupada has this nice little purport. That this is the purpose of this Hare Krishna movement. So there's two. A human being. We're talking about human beings now, not any other lower species. Therefore, any human being who, through the process of asanga and susanga, there's two sides. Giving up the bad association and taking advantage of the good association. You see? We'll go into detail what that is. But bad association, good association. What happens? Gives birth or gives rise to jnanasena, the sword of knowledge. The sword of knowledge, first of all. By which you can vritna moha, cut off the bonds of illusion. Vritna. Vritka means, like we have a, what is that? Vriksha, that which is cut down, is a word for tree. So, yeah, vivrikna moha. So with the sword of knowledge, we need to read, we need to study, we need to discuss this philosophy. Threadbare, Prabhupada said. And that will help us to cut off our illusion. But that's not all. Then, harim tadiha katana shutabhyam. Hearing about the activities, the lila of Krishna, you know. And that doesn't include just dancing in Vrindavan. It also includes creation of this material world. That's part of his lila, of his activities. That's why he says iha. He doesn't say just lila, but iha means all activities. Katana shutabhyam, hearing and chanting. Then, very interesting word, labda smriti. One regains one's remembrance. We know all these things. It's buried deep within our subconscious, you know, because we've been there. So this is an important idea. Labda smritir, that we regain our remembrance. That's why it feels so natural. When you're really in the fire of Krishna consciousness, you know, you feel, oh, this is perfectly natural. This is what I should be doing. And then what happens? Yat titi padam admana. One goes back to Godhead. You proceed nicely on the path, admana, back to the supreme abode. So just think, it's such a nice verse. But it starts, you know, with rejecting bad association and accepting good association. And that's what these temples are all for. That's what Prabhupada says in the purport. We are inviting people to come, take shelter of the temples, get the good association, in this way give up bad association, and hear about Krishna and the science of Krishna consciousness, and then practice. It's not just some theoretical thing. Then you can also practice it. That's, you know, it's a wonderful gift. And by doing that, you develop the sword of knowledge, just like the sword of remembrance. We need these swords. Krishna, asanga shastrena, there's another sword of detachment. We need these weapons, you know, to cut off our illusion, to cut off our attachment to this world. But simultaneously, And proportionally, we need to increase our attachment to Krishna. And that's why it's so nice to hear about his wonderful form. And not just his form, but how his great devotees appreciate the form. The more that you love Krishna, the more that you're you know, obsessed with seeing him. To the point where the gopis do not even want to blink. They condemn Brahma, the creator, for creating eyelids. What kind of design is that? Where we have to miss seeing Krishna for a split second? They call him a fool. You know, not an offense, he likes it. But you see, because they so much want to see Krishna. Imagine what it would be like, where we're dying for those curtains to open. We're never late to Mangalarti. You know, we want to see the greeting of the deities. We want to just see that beautiful threefold bending form of Krishna. You know? But we don't have the eyes yet. Premanjanachari, the Bhakti Vilachari. So we're trying to develop that vision. Everybody sees according to their consciousness. So the more pure we are, the more we develop some attraction for Krishna by the authorized process of hearing and chanting and all the different things. The more we'll appreciate everything about Krishna. His name, his form, qualities, service, devotees, everything. That's the whole idea. Okay. I'll read these two translations again, if you hear me. After his own dynasty, this is Maharaj Parikshit asking Shukadeva to please describe how his dynasty disappeared. After his own dynasty meant destruction from the curse of the Brahmins, how could the best of the Yadus give up his body, the dearmost object of all eyes? Once their eyes were fixed upon his transcendental form, women were unable to withdraw them. And once that form had entered the ears of the sages and become fixed in their hearts, it would never depart. What to speak of acquiring fame, the great poets who describe the beauty of the Lord's form would have their words invested with transcendentally pleasing attraction. And by seeing that form on Arjuna's chariot, all the warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained the liberation of gaining a spiritual body similar to the Lord's. Any comments or questions on these few points? Okay, then I'll give you one or two more shlokas about Krishna's form. Barha pidam natavada vapu. This is a famous verse. This really should be learned. Barha pidam natavada vapu karneyo karnikaram bimbran vasak kanaka kapisham vaijayantin chamalam randran veno adadasudayapu deyan gopa vrindar vrindaranyam svapadanamanam pravishad gita kirti. With lovely peacock plume upon his head and fragrant flower placed upon each ear, he enters Burja's woods with graceful tread, a handsome dancing actor without peer. His golden yellow raiment brightly glows, his splendid garland reaches to his knees, and from his luscious lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with charming melodies. As Krishna thus begins his blissful day with cowherd friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies Vrindavan's forest way with fine impressions of his lotus feet. All glories to Shri Prabhupada. Hari Hari Bol.